Okay, so we're on the almost the last day of Hanukkah, one more day to go. And it's important to understand what's a lasting message that Hanukkah can give us for the entire year. Every single Yontif, as we always talk about, has to have its lasting message. It's not just a time we commemorate the past, but something which is relevant, ongoing, and moves on into the future. So I want to focus in on a different message of Hanukkah today and try to take a message of Hanukkah with us for the rest of the year. And it's interesting because Hanukkah is a Yom Tov which reaches every Jew out there. I mean, even the most assimilated Jew seems to observe Hanukkah in some way. And we attribute it to the time of year, around the non-Jewish holidays, Jews looking for their identity. So they also try to find their holiday, which is Hanukkah. But we've mentioned before, there's no coincidences in the world. The reason that Hashem has made it that Hanukkah and the non-Jewish holidays fall out at the same time of year, there's a reason for that. There's some message in that Hanukkah is a holiday which causes Jews who are even somewhat lost from Judaism, Jews who are very assimilated, Jews who are unaffiliated, they still use Hanukkah as their way back in and to maintain their identity. So we have to understand, what's the message of Hanukkah that really reaches every single Jew and brings them back to their identity? I mean, Hanukkah historically is at a time where the Jews were really out of luck. It was a time of persecution. It was a time of assimilation. There was civil, even besides the Greeks, there was civil war amongst the Jews during the period of Hanukkah. And the period of the Second Temple, even though we picture it as a sort of ideal state of the Jewish life, was very less than ideal. It was not a rosy period of history. The First Temple was. The times of the First Temple we look at as more of an ideal situation. The times of the Second Temple, there were wars, there was inner fighting amongst the Jews, there was persecution from the outside, from the inside, there were very corrupt kings and corrupt leadership. It was not a great time for the Jewish people. And the miracles of Hanukkah happened in that time period, in the time period of the Second Temple, when things were really at a low, and things were really, we were totally in a rut. That's when the miracles of Hanukkah happened. And even after the miracles happened, so we picture, okay, the Jews came in, they overpowered the Greeks, they came into the Beis HaMikdash, they rededicated the temple, they found their oil, they had the miracle lasted for 8 days. So we think, okay, at that point and onwards, everything was in good shape, we were fine, we were happy. It's not so true. They were still dealing with the Greeks for another, I think, year or two, historically. I don't know the exact dates, but they still had to deal with the Greeks for a while longer. And that was besides the Hellenist Jews, who were constantly causing problems with them for the next two centuries. In addition to that, the Hashmonaim, the ones we call the Maccabees, those Jews who led the rebellion and took over the temple. So they took over the mantle of leadership of Jewish people. And the descendants of the Maccabees were very corrupt leaders, most of them. We have a lot of terrible kings who really brought the Jews away from God into both politically and religiously distressful times. And Hanukkah was the center of all this. But yet there was a miracle of Hanukkah which happened in the middle of this crazy turmoil which happened in the Second Temple period, at a low. So what was the message of that? And the message of that, to me, is very clear, that even so, even though we're in a period of a terrible period for the Jews, a period where Jews were really at a low, both spiritually, physically, politically, but when Hashem saw there were Jews who were still sacrificing their lives for Torah, so Hashem brought about a miracle. But there are Jews who are willing to rise up and fight against others so they can observe Torah appropriately, Hashem's willing to step in and intervene, even in low, terrible times. So the message of Hanukkah, I would say, one very powerful message of Hanukkah, is that Hashem took care of us even in our lowest, darkest times. When it was the lowest, darkest times of the Jewish people, besides there was anti-Semitism at its worst, where they were totally stripping us of all of our beliefs, they were banning us from observing Torah, there was inner turmoil as well. Even within that, Hashem reaches in. Hashem helps us to militarily overcome the Greeks. Hashem helps, shows us a miracle with the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash itself. And it's a message that we should never feel abandoned by Hashem, no matter what. No matter how far off we've gone, no matter how low we are, no matter how assimilated people have become. Hanukkah is a time where Hashem says He's going to reach in and help out every single Jew who was willing to step up and fight for Judaism. So I think that's one very powerful, overarching message of Hanukkah. What I want to do is I want to examine some of the halachos of Hanukkah, some of the laws which we observe in lighting the menorah, and show those laws actually fit into this theme. It's a fascinating thing. Many of the, a lot of Hasidic works tend to do this. They'll take a mitzvah, and they'll take its laws, and show how every single law of the mitzvah, besides being, we look at it as a detail, a technicality, it actually is trying to show us a much more powerful message, and express the idea behind the mitzvah. So let's think about the mitzvah of Chanukah. The mitzvah of Chanukah is we light the menorah. 8 nights, we light the menorah. Number one, the mitzvah of Chanukah is in the middle of the winter, usually darkest time of year, around the solstice, and that symbolizes darkness. It's a time of darkness, it's a time of turmoil, it's a time of depression. It's lit at nighttime. So it's in the middle of the winter, which is the darkest time of the year, the coldest time of the year, and it's lit in the nighttime, in the darkness of the night. And darkness always symbolizes to us the turbulence and trouble. You know, the feeling of cold is a feeling of abandon. We use that even metaphorically to say a person's very cold. He doesn't really care about me. If he's very warm, he's very, very open to me. So the cold, dark winter, in the nighttime, we light it up with our Hanukkah candles. So it's showing that even in the darkest part of our lives, there is that illumination which comes from Hashem. There's another halacha which we're probably less familiar with, which is the following. A lot of times in the Gemara compares Shabbos candles to Hanukkah candles. And there's differences in terms of the laws, and there's similarities. So one discussion the Gemara has is that when it comes to Shabbos candles, we're limited in which wicks and oils we're allowed to use. The Gemara defines basically that on Shabbos, you're not allowed to adjust the flame on Shabbos itself. Because on Shabbos, one of the forbidden labors is mavir, to create a fire, ignite a fire, adjust a fire. So Gemara says you're limited to wicks and oils which burn smoothly, nicely, don't flicker, because we don't want you having a flickering candle on Shabbos, you didn't come to adjust the candle. And that's the Gemara's discussion. Again, nowadays for us, we don't really have so many options. We're not as familiar with the candles. We used to use them every single day, the candles. But so our Shabbos candles typically, you know, burn nicely. We use the candle or the oil, and we're set. But the Gemara says, in their times, you have to find a good quality wick, good quality oil, which would burn smoothly, wouldn't flicker, would give a nice light. So no one would be tempted to adjust the flame on Shabbos. And it gives a list of exactly which oils and which wicks are good. Not our topic tonight. But the Gemara says, there's a dispute about it, but the halacha, the way that we rule practically, is that on Chanukah you can use any wick and any candle you want, any wick and any oil you want. It doesn't matter which one you use, all wicks and all oils are good for Chanukah. So technically it's because on Chanukah there's no concern with adjusting the wicks and the oils, because on Chanukah, it's, on the weekdays, you're about to adjust the fire, it's not a problem.
Yeah, it goes out,
you don't have to rewrite it. You don't have to relight it, it goes out. Right, exactly. So, therefore, in Chanukah, that concern doesn't exist, and you can use any oil and any wick you want. There's a deeper message in this. A lot of the Hasidic works explain that the terms in Hebrew for oils and wicks, there's three different parts of the ancient lamp. You'd have the actual bowl holding the oil, the lamp we call the lamp. You would have the oil inside it, and you have a wick coming out of it. And that the three words in Hebrew are ner, is for the lamp, shemen is the oil, and then you have the pesila, the wick is pesila. And those three letters spell the word nefesh, the soul. Because the Jewish soul is compared to a fire, to a lamp.
Can you say them just one more time?
Ner is the lamp. Next one should be pesila. Pesila is a wick. And then you have the shemen is the oil. So the first three letters, the first letters of those words spell nefesh.
What was the last of the
P? Pesila. Pesila. So that's an acronym. Nefesh is an acronym for Ner, Pesila, Shemen. Is what a lot of the Hasidic works describe. Which means that metaphorically the Jewish soul is compared to a candle, compared to a flame. So you can take that metaphor in a lot of different ways. You know, the soul is supposed to illuminate us, the soul is supposed to help us, you know, give us light, give us warmth. We're supposed to be able to express that soul. So you can use that metaphor in a lot of different ways. But in terms of Chanukah and Shabbos, many of the Hasidic works explain that even those souls don't get inspired by Shabbos. On Shabbos, we're limited in which wicks and which oils we can use. So even those wicks and those oils, those souls, as we're saying, they don't get inspired and illuminated by Shabbos, those souls can still get illuminated and inspired by Chanukah. Because in Chanukah, there's no limits. You can use any oil and any wick you want. So that's what they explain it. So again, you have a halacha, which seems to be a very innocent halacha. Okay, on Chanukah, you can take any wick, any oil you want to use, it's no problem. But on a deeper level, it's showing that on Chanukah is a time where Jewish souls can get inspired. Even those souls that are typical Shabbos, or a typical Yom Tov, can't inspire and can't reach. On Chanukah, every single Jewish soul can be reached with the mitzvah of Chanukah. The illumination of the menorah can really illuminate every single Jew out there. So that's another halacha you find, which expresses this idea that Chanukah reaches out to every single Jew, no matter what situation they're in.
Yes. The light, Shabbos candles first. I thought I read that.
First? What do you mean?
Before the
They do Hanukkah candles first.
I don't know where I read that, and it didn't make any sense.
No, you do Hanukkah candles first, yeah. Because once you light the Shabbos candles, you can't light fire anymore. Yeah, right, for sure. There's a discussion about Havdalah. Should you make Havdalah before lighting Hanukkah candles or vice versa? There's a discussion about that. But it seems, I mean, there's two different customs. I mean, I think the common custom is, at home at least, to make Havdalah and then light the candles.
But you need to finish one day before starting another day. I kind of have no question about it. You finish Shabbos, you separate Shabbos from the big day, then you light the candle, no?
Right, well, the other idea is that we try to light Hanukkah candles the earliest we possibly can in the night, so you have more publicity of the nes, of the miracle. So when people are out on the streets earlier in the night, so you don't want to delay lighting Hanukkah candles at all. That's the other side of the discussion. I think the common practice is to do Havdalah first and then the Hanukkah candles. It's the common practice.
At my shul, the rabbi was afraid that there would be a mass exodus at the Havdalah.
Yeah.
And he didn't think anybody would be there for the Hanukkah lighting, so he did the Hanukkah before. He said,
I mean, the truth is, when it comes to lighting in the shul, the custom, I think the common custom is that way. That even though at home we do Havdalah first and then light the candles. It could be for what you're saying. Yeah, it could be for that reason. That's another good point. But overall, in terms of, so the Shabbos candles symbolize that there's a limited amount of souls that Shabbos reaches. But Hanukkah reaches every Jewish soul out there. That's the idea of having Hanukkah having unlimited oils and wicks, whereas on Shabbos, we're limited to which oils and wicks we could use. Next halacha, which portrays this idea, is that, and we kind of miss out on this nowadays in America, but ideally, and even in modern-day Israel, the candles are lit outside the house on the street. The way the Gemara describes the halacha of lighting Hanukkah candles, the way it's even quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, ideally, is you're supposed to light Hanukkah candles outside of your house, right at the door, going out to the public street. That's the ideal way to light. The Gemara discusses, and the different authorities discuss, how outside of Israel, we're worried about it might be dangerous in terms of publicizing our religion, maybe we'll instigate anti-Semitism, so we kind of go back into our houses and light it quietly in our house. But ideally, the mitzvah is to light it outside the streets. And in modern Israel, if you go to Israel and Hanukkah, they all light outside on the streets. Sorry. Not on the streets. So the ideal mitzvah is to light out on the streets. Again, in America, most people do not perform it on the streets, but that's the ideal mitzvah. So you think about lighting on the streets. So symbolically, that means I'm taking the holiness of the menorah, and I'm taking it on the public street. Public street, where all sorts of people are out in the streets. It's not limited to the shul, it's not limited to the Jewish house. But I'm going out in the streets where the masses are out there, no matter who they are, what kind of people they are, what their backgrounds are, and I'm displaying to them the holiness of Hanukkah. So again, lighting the menorah on the public street, which is the ideal mitzvah, and even we put it in our window, displaying it to the streets that we do it. But ideally, we're trying to show that the power of Hanukkah is for everybody. The power of the menorah is to illuminate every single person out there, no matter who they are, where they're coming from. Now, what's happening on the street? The menorah is out there giving the light of Hanukkah to those streets. So that's the idea of lighting in the street. Another halacha, which ideally we should do, but most people don't do, is that the Gemara says the menorah should be lit under 10 tefachim. A tefach is approximately 4 inches. So the menorah ideally should be lit very low down, so under 40 inches, let's say. The reason for that, in the Gemara's terms, is because we don't want anyone to confuse the Hanukkah candle with your nightly candle, keeping light to your house. In their days, they didn't have electric lights, so in their homes, they would have their candle on their table all night, every single night to give light to their homes. So the light you use in your house to read, to do work in the house with, would be high. It would be up here somewhere, maybe hanging from the ceiling, wherever it was. So not to confuse that with your Hanukkah candles, the Gemara recommends putting the Hanukkah candles lower, so everyone's clear, that candle's for a mitzvah, it's not for my nightly usage. And my nightly usage candles would be up higher on the table, or up on the ceiling, wherever they'd be, higher up. And even nowadays, ideally, if you have a place to do it, it's best to light the candles under 10 tefachim, under 40 inches. So let's say you have a window which is lower down out of your house, so you should really put the candles down near the lower window, under 40 inches, that's the best place to put it. If you don't have a window that's low enough down, it's better to put it by the window higher up. Again, if you have little kids running around also, then I don't recommend putting it down low either, which is my situation. But ideally, the candles are lit under 10 tefachim. Again, beneath 40 inches. The Gemara discusses this amount of 10 tefachim a lot. Halachically, it's a significant amount. And 10 tefachim is always viewed as the minimal space of like of an area. So the minimal size house would be 10 tefachim high. It's going to be a small house, but you can actually go in and it's a room, you can store something in it. Under 10 tefachim is considered too small to be anything. 10 tefachim is your minimal area. The Gemara also tells us, and this is actually in a different topic, but the Gemara just says that God's presence doesn't go below 10 tefachim. The Shekhinah remains above 10 tefachim. The Shekhinah remains higher up, and we're low down. So again, what that means, is it literal, is not literal, that's not really our topic for now. But the Gemara says that the Shekhinah remains up high, God's presence remains higher up, and doesn't go below 10. Yet on Hanukkah, a lot of the different commentaries explain, we see that the menorah is supposed to be below 10. We should have the menorah under 10 tefachim. See that typically the divine presence rests above 10 tefachim, but the menorah should be placed below 10 tefachim. How do we reconcile those two different concepts? So again, a lot of these Hasidic explanations are given that usually mitzvahs are reserved for people on more lofty levels, more lofty heights. They can't come down to the nitty-gritty of this world. You know, mitzvahs shouldn't be down in the dirt, down in the dust. Chanukah is one mitzvah which is ideally supposed to be put down low, which symbolizes that Chanukah reaches out to every single person, even a person who's down in the dump, somebody who's way down in the dirt, somebody, whether it be physically or spiritually, is completely downtrodden. Chanukah is a mitzvah which is supposed to inspire and reach that person as well. So we light the Chanukah candles, ideally, low down to the ground for that purpose. On Chanukah, the Shekhinah is able to descend lower. Again, whatever that means, the Shekhinah is able to descend lower during the rest of the year and reach to every single person, even when they, no matter how far they've gone, no matter how similar they are, no matter how unaffiliated they are, but Chanukah is able to reach that Jew no matter where they are. There's a, so that's the idea of it being below 10 tefachim. If you look at the story of Chanukah itself, you find a similar imagery. The story of Chanukah, they went into the temple, they didn't have any pure oil. They finally find, hidden away, one small flask of pure oil stamped with the seal of the Kohen Gadol, and they're able to use that to kindle the menorah for 8 days. So we think about that symbolically. What could that mean for us? It's a similar idea. You walk into a temple, it's totally defiled. Everything is impure. Things are broken. There's idols everywhere. It's very, very estranged from what the temple is supposed to look like. Yet, hidden deep, there's this pure vial of oil, untouched, still pristine, still beautiful. And that vial of oil is supposed to represent to us that every single Jew, no matter where they are, has this pure soul within them. And even though this Jew looks like their person who is defiled, who's impure, who's estranged from Judaism, but yet, deep inside, there's that pure vial of oil ready to be lit and ready to help the Jew shine once again. And it's a similar imagery. So we had it on the physical, miraculous level. They found this oil in a burn for 8 days. But it's no coincidences. Symbolically, that's the message of Chanukah. The message of Chanukah is within every single Jew, you can find that pure oil ready to shine, ready to illuminate. And if you find that in the Jew, you can light them up and they can shine forth once again. That was in the article we're talking about. that piece right there. But it's the same idea. It's that every single person, there's ability of every single Jew to illuminate and to shine from that point of purity within. You have to find that pure oil. When you find that pure oil, the person can shine forth. Chanukah has that ability to bring out the Jewish soul from within every single Jew. That's the ability of Chanukah. And it's fascinating because in the Chanukah story, the Yavanim, the Greeks, what they tried to do was assimilate us. They tried to Hellenize us, assimilate us, bring us away from Jewish observance. And on Chanukah, we counteract that. The holiday of Chanukah counteracts that assimilation. They're taking us into assimilation. And Chanukah says, no, even Jews that are assimilated are going to come back to Judaism on Chanukah. Chanukah is going to reach every single Jew, the Hellenized Jew out there, the assimilated Jew out there, who all year long doesn't identify themselves Jewishly. On Chanukah is going to bring them magnetically back into the fold. That's what Chanukah is going to do. So it totally counteracts the goal of the Greeks at the time of the Chanukah story. So when you think about it, it's a fascinating thing. We look at it, it just happens to be a fluke that so many Jews observe Chanukah. But there's no flukes in God's world. There's no coincidences. And there's a reason for this, the way this happens. The great Shlomo Rebbe, talking about the Hasidic books, the Shlomo Rebbe, he wrote a book, the Nesivo Shalom. His name was Rav Shalom Noach, I think Razovsky, I think was his name. And he gives a beautiful analogy. And this analogy he gives, it teaches us a perspective on Shabbos, on Yom Tov, and then on Chanukah in particular. He says that, you know, there's three types of holidays. Shabbos is one type of holiday, and Shabbos is a time where we elevate ourselves to the king's palace. He says it's an analogy, the king has a son, he has a prince, and one day a week, he designates to go visit his father in the palace. Shabbos is that idea. Shabbos is one day a week designated where we visit our father in his palace. Shabbos is a time where we mark Hashem as the creator of the world. It's not because anything happened to us on Shabbos. We're recognizing what Hashem did overall on Shabbos. And we elevate ourselves on Shabbos to visit Hashem in his palace, as it were. That's the idea of Shabbos. He says Yom Tov is the opposite. Yom Tov is when the king goes out to visit his son. Yom Tov is a time which Yom Tov always marks the different miracles which happened to us, that Hashem did for us. Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkot, these things Hashem did for us. Hashem's coming to us to intervene and help us. Yom Tov can be during a weekday. On Yom Tov actually has less of a holiness than Shabbos overall. And therefore, Yom Tov is a time where Hashem comes to visit us, where we are, and we welcome Hashem into our homes in Yom Tov. So on Shabbos, we come into Hashem's palace. On Yom Tov, Hashem comes to our home. And then he says, what's Chanukah? He says a very powerful analogy. Chanukah is, let's say the king's son falls into the sewer, and there's no one else around to help save his son. And his son's in the sewer, drowning. So the king is going to jump into the sewer with his royal crown, in his royal garb, go down into the dirty, disgusting, smelly sewer to save his son. That's what the king will do. He says, that's Chanukah. Chanukah is the time where, if nobody else is around to save those Jews who are down in the dirt, those Jews who are totally removed and estranged from Judaism, whose souls are being defiled, and their souls got tossed into the sewer. So during that time, Hashem then jumps in his royal crown, as it were, to come save us from the situation. That's the idea of Chanukah. So you see that there's, and that's what we find in Al Nisim. We say, "Achar kein bo banecha l'rivesecha." After the miracle, your sons came, your children came into your palace. So we refer to as our children, as Hashem's children on Chanukah. That's what we refer to in the prayers. We refer to the Jews as Hashem's children on Chanukah, because when it comes to a child, we're willing to do whatever we have to do to save them. So even though typically Hashem may remain a little bit more lofty, a little harder to reach, above 10 tefachim as we described it, on Chanukah Hashem's willing to jump into the dirt, jump into the defilement and the impurity which was there at the time, and save us. And it applies yearly. Yearly, Chanukah is a time which we said reaches every single Jew, no matter where they are. Chanukah is a time that can inspire every person, no matter what situation they're in. It's a time where Hashem's willing to go beneath the impurity which we've piled upon ourselves and draw us out and save us. That's what Chanukah is about. So in Chanukah, we recognize that in all times, even the hardest, darkest times, most impure times, times of the most defilement and the most trouble, Hashem is still with us, He's still our Father, and He's still willing to jump in and intervene and save us, even in those terrible times. So that I find that to be a very powerful message of Chanukah, which you see how practically, how relevant it is. Because again, how many Jews identify themselves as Jews through Chanukah? I mean, unfortunately, too many Jews, but that's how it is. But even us who identify ourselves as Jews all year long, Chanukah still has a very powerful message, because Chanukah is a time where Hashem is showing how dear the Jewish people are to Him. Every single Jew, no matter where they are, what they do, is dear to Hashem, is precious to Hashem, and Hashem is willing to step in and help them no matter what. The Rambam has a very interesting description of Chanukah. And the Rambam is very, very short on words, typically. And the Rambam, as you know, many, many scholars spend, you know, much time analyzing, doesn't waste words. And the Rambam describes Chanukah. He says the lighting of the menorah is chavivei amod. It's a very, very dear mitzvah. And the Rambam isn't known to use poetry and describe things in flowery terms. But he says, and the only time he discusses any mitzvah and calls it a very dear mitzvah is lighting the menorah. It's so dear and so precious. And I want to understand what makes the lighting of the menorah so dear and so precious to us. And it is. Everyone has a nice warm feeling lighting the menorah. It's a really nice time. Brings back good memories. It's very warm. And it is a very precious time for every Jew. And how does it fit Chanukah, that Chanukah is a time where we do mitzvah, which the Rambam describes as a very, very dear, precious mitzvah. And I want to share with you a beautiful understanding from Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Bir Yeshiva in Jerusalem in the previous generation. And he says a very beautiful idea about Hanukkah, which I think fits into the entire picture we're trying to paint about Hanukkah. He says, if you look at the miracles of Hanukkah, the famous person in Hanukkah has two miracles. Hanukkah has the miracle where the small Jewish army overpowered the large, powerful Greek army. Then you also have the miracle where that small vial of oil lasted for 8 days in the base of Mikdash. So if you think about it, the fact that we overpowered the Greek army was a necessary miracle. It had to be done in a certain sense, because Hashem made a covenant with our forefathers that the Jewish people will remain. They'll carry on. There will be Judaism for eternity until our final salvation, until Mashiach comes. So Hashem had to step in and save us. Hashem doesn't have to do anything. But that isn't a miracle of necessity. It's a miracle which we needed to be saved. Our lives were at stake. Torah was at stake. Judaism was at stake. So something had to be done to help us. But the miracle where the oil lasted for 8 days seems to be totally unnecessary. It wasn't a miracle of necessity. It was something which Hashem did extra for us. Hashem could have let that oil burn one day, and so we would have had to wait another, whatever it was, a week to get more oil. But it wasn't a miracle that had to be performed. Why did Hashem perform that miracle? So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz gives an example from Yosef, from I guess it was Parshas Vayeshev, 2 weeks ago. Right, 2 weeks ago is Parsha. And when Yosef is sold by his brothers, the Torah describes that he was picked up by a caravan of Arabs going down into Egypt. And the Torah describes what that caravan was selling. And it says it was selling a lot of these nice smelling spices and perfumes. So Rashi in the Chumash describes, well, why does the Torah bother to tell us the contents of the caravan? I mean, it doesn't really matter. In terms of the story of Yosef, they could have been selling camels, could have been selling chickens, they could have been selling clothes, could have been, it doesn't matter what they're selling. So why does it matter they're selling spices and perfumes? So Rashi says that typically these Arab caravans used to carry very foul-smelling items. But this time, Hashem performed a miracle and happened to bring about a caravan selling very sweet perfumes. So when Yosef was thrown into the caravan, he'd have a nice smell. He'd have a nice aroma to enjoy along the way. That's what Rashi describes in the Torah. Now, which is very strange to us, because when Yosef is being cut off from his brothers, cut off from his father, he thinks he's going to be one of the 12 tribes, and his life is now over. He's being sold as a slave into Egypt. He'll never see his father, his brothers again. For all he knows, this is it. But yet, it smelled nice along the way. So now everything's okay. Why does it matter to smell nice along the way? Why is that such a special thing? So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz explains that there's times where Hashem performs miracles just to show a person that I'm with you. He calls it a kiss. There's some miracles which are just a kiss from Hashem. It's not necessary. It's not like if this didn't happen, anything in history would have changed. But Hashem sometimes shows an individual, I'm here for you, I love you, I'm with you. And even though things look very bleak, and things look very dark, and things look like, you know how you have the situation, don't worry, I'm here with you, I love you, I'm taking care of you. So that is why Hashem provided this miracle to Yosef and gave him the sweet perfumes in the caravan. So Chashlos, he gives other examples of this as well, other examples of unnecessary miracles, which are kisses from Hashem. But then he says, that's Hanukkah as well. The fact that we had to overpower the Greeks to win the war, that wasn't necessarily because we were so beloved and dear to Hashem. But Hashem said, there's a purpose in this world, I have a covenant with the forefathers, we have to keep Torah going, we have to keep the Jewish people around. But when Hashem provided the miracle of the menorah, he was giving a kiss to the Jews and saying, I still love you, I'm still with you, even through this time, which is very bleak, and very dark, and there's a lot of turmoil, inner fighting, everything we described, I'm still with you throughout this time as well. And the menorah was that kiss from Hashem. It was an unnecessary miracle, but it's like sending a bouquet of flowers. Bouquet of flowers, it doesn't really mean much practically, but it makes somebody feel cared about. That's the idea. It was that kiss, it's that bouquet of flowers. That's why Hashem performed that miracle. And that's the message of Hanukkah. It's Hashem is saying, I'm with the Jews at all times. They're very dear to me. And just like the Jews are dear to Hashem, so Hanukkah becomes very endeared to us as well. That's how we can understand the Rambam's description of Hanukkah. Hanukkah is a time where Hashem shows how dear and precious every Jew is to me. And I'm going to give them a kiss, even when they're not performing at their best, even when things look very dark and bleak, they still get a kiss. And on Hanukkah, we reciprocate. On Hanukkah becomes very dear to us, and we give that kiss back to Hashem once again. And to even put this into the halacha as well, we discussed how a lot of these ideas fit into the halachas of Hanukkah. There's an interesting phenomenon halachically in Hanukkah, which is that I think it's the only mitzvah which the Gemara prescribes three different levels of performing the mitzvah. And each level is considered more beautiful. What I mean by that is the Gemara describes how technically, if you light one candle every night, you've done your mitzvah. One candle per household. So you have a household of 10 people, that one candle, even on the seventh night, one candle, and they've done their mitzvah. The Gemara then says the second level of the mitzvah, which is one candle per person per night. So a household of 10 people would light 10 candles a night. And that's the second level of the mitzvah. And that's considered more beautiful. And then it has mahadra mina mahadra, the third, the most beautiful level of mitzvah is the way that we all customarily do it, which is to add a candle each night for each person in the house. So on the second night, you light two candles per person, third night, three candles per person. That's the way we typically do it. But it's a mitzvah where the halacha actually describes three different levels of doing it. One is the base level, one is the beautiful level, one is the most beautiful level. A deluxe way of doing it. And what's interesting is that it seems that every single Jew does a mitzvah in the most beautiful way. I don't know if you've ever seen a Jew ever light just one candle and that's it for their whole household. I mean, thank God nowadays we can afford the candles and we have available to us, so we're able to do it. But even the most assimilated Jew, when they light Hanukkah candles, does it in the Mahadrim and Mahadrim way. The most beautiful, the most deluxe way of doing it, that's how they do it. It's the same way. So you do read stories of the past, people couldn't afford it, or there were people in the concentration camps and they couldn't only find one wick, whatever it was, and they would just do that one candle and that was their mitzvah. But throughout history, it seems, certainly nowadays, every Jew does the mitzvah in the most ideal sense. You don't find that with most mitzvahs. Many mitzvahs have ways of beautifying them, doing them in a nicer way, but you find that majority of Jews will do it in a more basic manner. And you have the people who are very, very into it, very pious, you know, very observant, have extra money to spend, you know, really into that mitzvah. They'll do it the more beautiful way. But most people will do it the more basic way. Like, for instance, you know, on Sukkot, so you can go to buy your lulav and esrog, and they would sell it in three different categories. I like to see the stats of how many people buy the low category, how many the middle, how many the high. I don't think it's the same as Hanukkah. I really don't. It could be just more expensive there, too. But even so, I think most people there will buy the most basic lulav and esrog set. Whereas with Hanukkah, everybody does the most beautiful way of lighting the candles. And I think that the explanation of that fits very well into this concept. Hanukkah is a time where Hashem is showing us how dear we are to Him. So we're also showing Hashem how dear He is to us. Like, how do you show somebody how dear they are to you? It's not by doing the things which are required of you. It's by doing things which are not required of you, but you're trying to go that extra step to show the person you love them. So if you're trying to help somebody out and you do the bare minimum, so you've shown them, I don't want you to get killed, so I'm going to help you and just do the bare minimum to help save you. When you take care of the person and show them you love them, you know, really, really put your efforts in helping that person, that's how you really show how much the person means to you, how much you care about that person. So on Hanukkah, we don't just do the bare minimum of the mitzvah. We all try, everybody, and without thinking, everybody does the most beautiful way of the mitzvah, and to show Hashem how dear Hashem is to us, we do the mitzvah in the most beautiful manner. So it all fits into this bigger idea, that Hanukkah is a time where Hashem shows that every single Jew is dear and precious to Him. Hanukkah reaches to every single Jew, even those who are assimilated, estranged, and fallen. We give the analogy of the king, you know, diving into the sewer to save his son in the royal garments, which is part of the symbolism of Hanukkah. And that's the idea of the mitzvah. The mitzvah of Hanukkah is that we also, in turn, show Hashem how dear He is to us. So it's a time where we focus, as we said before, on the Hallel and the Hodah and praise and gratitude of Hashem. Besides Sukkot, it's the only holiday, as Judy mentioned, which we say the full Hallel for 8 days straight. It's a time where we feel a certain dearness of this holiday. I think a certain warmth, which you don't feel other holidays. And it's a time where everybody goes out of their way to do the mitzvah in the most beautiful manner, even though typically most people, I think, would do mitzvahs in their most basic manner, during other mitzvahs. So that's part of this message of Hanukkah. Tomorrow is the final day of Hanukkah. And classically, there's a special name for that day. It's called Zos Hanukkah. The Torah reading on the 8th day of Hanukkah, it begins, V'zos Chanukas HaMizbeach, doesn't begin, but it says in the Torah reading, V'zos Chanukas HaMizbeach, B'yom HiMashach, so this is literally the dedication of the altar on the day where it was anointed. But the word Zos Chanukah literally means, this is Hanukkah. This is Hanukkah. And the Hasidic masters explain how the 8th day of Hanukkah should be the essence of Hanukkah. When I say, this is Hanukkah, I'm saying, the 8th day is it. This is the essence of Hanukkah, comes down to the 8th day of Hanukkah. And there's a lot of explanations given as to why the 8th day is the essence of Hanukkah. But just from a basic level, Hanukkah, and every Yontif, at the very last day, is considered a powerful day. The last day of Sukkot, the Shemini Atzeres, is supposed to be a day where it's a special time between the Jews and Hashem. The last day of Pesach has that meaning. It's, you know, it's a culmination of the days. Shavuos is a culmination of the whole Pesach and Sefirot Omer period. The final day of all holidays is considered a culmination, which means it includes within it the power of all the days. when you look at your menorah tonight, you see all eight candles burning. There's a special power to that as well. All eight candles are there now. I've made it through. And have 8 days of Hanukkah to inspire me and uplift me. And it's a time where we have to really reflect and bring in and absorb all the ideas of Hanukkah. It's been 8 days of, hopefully, inspiration, of joy, of happiness, of celebration. And it all comes down to tonight, and tomorrow is the final day. This is Hanukkah. And it's a time to really bring in these messages of Hanukkah and let the really bright, you know, eight candles on our menorahs really inspire us and illuminate our lives. There's a fascinating idea, I guess sort of a mystical type idea, which is that Hanukkah is not only the eighth of Hanukkah, it's not only the culmination of Hanukkah, but it's a culmination of this entire period beginning after Tisha B'Av until now. On the Jewish calendar, the calendar divides, I think, into two different chunks. You have the period from the rabbis say for Tu B'Av. The Tu B'Av is the day where the morning of Tisha B'Av sort of subsides, and we celebrate, 50th of Av. From that, it brings us to Elul, the time of Tshuva, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres, and finally to Hanukkah. There's a lot of sources backing up, but that's all one continuous period, which we don't have time to discuss right now. But the way it's described, this has been one great, you know, spiritual experience, starting from getting over the morning of Tisha B'Av all the way through Hanukkah. And Hanukkah, the eighth of Hanukkah in particular, culminates that entire period. And even though we discuss how Yom Kippur, our judgment for the year, is sealed, there are some more Kabbalistic sources that say that really that judgment kind of still remains in limbo until Hanukkah. Which I don't know exactly how to understand that. You know, we don't pray and fast and do tshuva on Hanukkah necessarily. But there are sources that even the Yom Kippur isn't finalized till Hanukkah. And this is the end of that whole period of the year. After this, we complete the winter, we have Purim, Pesach, and Shavuos. This is another period of the year. But from Tu B'Av, the 15th of Av, until Hanukkah is looked at as one large period of spiritual growth, of inspiration. And this tomorrow, the 8th day of Hanukkah, is that final day to culminate this entire period. So today, where we really need to take in the light of Hanukkah, the light, as we described last week, Hanukkah is the light of the Torah, Hanukkah is the light of Hashem's warmth and love for us, the endearment of Hashem. And this light should bring us through the dark times, through the rest of the winter, until we get to the brightness of the more holidays. And in our lives, it should help bring us through times of turmoil and times of darkness, and help sustain us as an individual, as a people, until our final salvation in the times of Mashiach. And that's the light of Hanukkah. Any questions?
Yeah. Where would the gifts come in?
The gifts.
Yeah.
I think that's more just from the non-Jewish holidays. I think that's a fairly...
It's very Jewish.
Gelt is more Jewish.
Yeah.